This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington talking with Casey Edwards. And boy, it's great to have a chance to talk with you about the music that you contributed for Devil May Cry 5. So welcome and thanks for your time.
Hey, Kate. Thank you so much. No, I'm really excited to be talking to you. I actually listened to your show and I love hearing what everybody else has to say. So hopefully I can contribute something equally as good.
I don't think there's any doubt of that. And what makes this so fun is that everybody who's in the game music industry, even in a tangential way, just has such great stories to tell, and they're so excited about it. So, and it sounds like you are too, because from what I understand, you've been playing Devil May Cry like really for a long time, like from the beginning almost.
Yeah, so the story I've gotten to tell a few times is actually how when I first started playing it, my mom took me to Blockbuster. So if that doesn't age me enough or the game itself. But yeah, I remember her taking me there and I rented the game on a whim and I instantly fell in love with it. I mean, these were my high school teenage years. Full angst was on. Someone handed me a dark gothic video game with heavy metal in it. I pretty much fell into it immediately. Yeah, and I remember playing the game and just really losing myself in it. And the game also itself, even though it's kind of, you know, dark and gothic and you fight demons and all these other weird things, the game kind of has its tongue firmly in its cheek. It's kind of doesn't take its stuff too seriously. It's kind of fun and funny at times, but also manages to tell a pretty serious story about family, I guess, if you kind of boil it down to its, you know, most common denominator.
Yeah, and there's a love interest too with Kyrie. I mean, she's really vulnerable, and Nero especially really wants to like protect her and treasure her and keep her out of danger. So yeah, even though there's a lot of hacking and slashing, it has its tender moments. So
yeah, of course. I think that also goes to kind of show Nero's youngness and his sort of brash way of thinking. It's sort of not, you know, fully developed yet, because I remember in one of the games, I'm pretty sure it was DMC4, there was a part where Dante was trying to interfere with something that was actually bad happening, and Nero just decided to make an off-the-cuff decision because he thought Kyrie was in danger, when in fact Dante was there trying to just help. And so they end up fighting. Little did he know that they're on the same side. So yeah, he wasn't always the smartest, but he was definitely one of my favorite. I'm really glad they gave me the opportunity to write specifically for him.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, and he's a pretty recent character too, because I think he just arrived in DMC4, right?
Yeah.
So, and he's this kind, yeah, like you say, he's this sort of, not naive exactly, but enthusiastic kind of hotshot teenager. So yeah, it must have been really fun to write for him. And so what were some of the qualities either that Capcom asked you to bring out in his personality, or that you decided on your own that you wanted to really, you know, show off with the music?
It's a great segue, because part of, you know, my interaction with Capcom when I started writing this song was basically adjective based. They weren't very specific in genre other than they used the word pop. I mean, and we both know that can be a very broad scope of you know, musical different kinds of things. But basically, they were saying things like young, you know, he's a hotshot, he's reckless. He gets himself into trouble quite a bit because he doesn't think things through. It was a lot of stuff like that. They weren't telling me, you know, make this in D minor, make it at 110 BPM. It wasn't very specific like that. They really left it open-ended for me to run and do my thing with it. So basically, I took all those adjectives and I immediately thought, you know, up-tempo, it's got to be up-tempo. We're fighting. I don't want people to feel like we're slugging through these action scenes that people are having. The gameplay, I really want it to move along. And then simultaneously with the pop part, you know, all the young and the hip and all that stuff, is I reached into the past, the, you know, teenage me that was playing this gothic game with heavy metal. I really didn't want to just leave that in the past and just only forge new ground with, you know, pop and DMC, which is already kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
So I started fusing in, you know, heavy metal guitars and trying to make my best effort into making these two things live together. It's kind of weird to imagine pop and metal somehow fusing itself together, but I did my best and I think the fans seem to be okay with it.
Yeah, no, that track Devil Trigger has, it's amazing, and it totally got stuck in my head. This morning in the studio, I was supposed to be listening to the Mozart that I had on the air, and all I could hear was Devil Trigger. So, cool. You did your job.
Yeah, I mean, you were Mozart. That's a hard one to beat in the catchy tune.
Well, it sort of got pummeled, I think. It pummeled into submission by Devil Trigger.
I think that's a perfectly accurate word to describe that.
Thank you.
Well, it was kind of like almost a preview of the game because it came out way far in advance of the game's release, like last summer. So did you know that that was going to be the intent, that it was kind of like the leading edge of PR for the game?
No, absolutely not. So I was asked to write this track in February of 2017, and I actually wrote and finished the song in 2 weeks, which is not unheard of for songwriting, but we had, you know, a lot more time to deal with it, and it just kind of came out really quickly. I was nervous that, you know, it wasn't going to stick with Capcom. I was kind of equally afraid of the lyrics. You know, when I first started writing the lyrics, again, it was another one of those, how do I start this? So I immediately thought, I'm just going to dig into my past again, the angsty teen playing DMC 1 and 2. And I thought about one of my favorite game mechanics that they had, which was the devil trigger. And I think the controls may have even said, you know, you can press this button to pull your devil trigger or activate your devil trigger. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to run with that. I like the idea of it. But Nero doesn't really have a devil trigger. You know, he's still sort of, you know, they're still sort of ironing out his storyline to lead into DMC 5. I wrote the lyric, bang, 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 pull my devil trigger. I gave it to Allie to demo for the track so we could send it off. And I guess the rest, as you could say, is history, if it's okay to say that. Yeah. And then, see, fast forward a year later, right before E3, they told me that the song was testing well internally between Microsoft, Sony, and Capcom. And they told me that they were going to put it in the announcement trailer. And I was extremely honored to have that privilege, but also incredibly terrified because we haven't had a DMC follow-up series since DMC 4. And that's been, what, 10 years since the E3 announcement. And it was my job to represent this character and the announcement of the franchise coming back. So, yeah, I was really nervous.
Yeah, no pressure though, right?
Yeah, right. I thought of myself as a fan first and foremost. You know, I wanted it to be good, and I did my best. And thank goodness the fans, it was overwhelmingly positive what they had to say. So I'm extremely thankful.
Oh, yeah. Well, just everything really comes together so well. And Allie just like really sells it. So how did you end up working with her?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. I guess I can say it's kind of how we ended up on the project together as well. Capcom absolutely had no idea that we were even married. By the way, we're married.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we've been working professionally since about 2012. We worked with Mick Gordon on a game called Killer Instinct. It was one of the Microsoft exclusives that they used to announce the console with, and it came out when the console came out. Xbox One, that is.
Yeah. Oh, and, way back.
Yeah. And funny enough, their song Touch Me and I'll Break Your Face won GDC, I think, in 2013.
Wow.
Best pop vocal. Yeah. I mean, they had a great run, and I really had fun working with both of them off and on for season one and season two of that game. And Capcom had heard wind through my agent, I believe, that I had, you know, helped out a little bit on that. And they loved the idea of more interactive song-based music that's high energy and upbeat. And that's how my name got tossed into the ring. But they actually referenced to me one of Allie's tracks, saying that they liked the energy of the track, not knowing that we work together or, you know, that we're married and we have these separate professional lives. And I thought it was kind of funny because when we started demoing the track, they're like, hey, this sounds familiar. You know, and yeah, no, she absolutely nailed it. It was definitely her energy that really finished off the icing on the cake, 100%.
Yeah, I love the way her voice sounds. It kind of reminded me a little bit of like Pat Benatar and those, you know, really great singers from the 80s. And I don't know if that's the sound she was going for, but that's how it struck me. And it's so perfect for the instrumentation and the energy and everything. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, who did those growly vocals? Was that you?
Oh, so no, that was not me. I cannot sing to save my life. I love the fact that I'm a multi-instrumentalist and I'm a composer and all that stuff, but I cannot sing. I wish I could. But that was another part of digging into the past and not wanting to, you know, forget DMC's, you know, lore and heavy metal and stuff. So I decided for the first verse, I wanted to include male grunge vocals to sort of pay homage to my own childhood and every other fan who grew up playing the games. And that's my friend Cliff Lorette. He's a video editor at a YouTube company called Node, which some people may or may not know about. But they do video game playthroughs and and other kind of, you know, group-related video game things, which is really cool. So it was really great having him on the project.
Yeah, because it really adds, a dark and growly and grungy quality to it. Because the setting, well, for the music video especially, the setting is super interesting. So who produced that, the music video?
So that was a combined effort between Capcom, Koyo Sanae, which is my agent, and myself. We were the main producers who were throwing together the ideas, but also it was Allie was throwing in her ideas. Cliff was throwing in her ideas. We had a wonderful DP on the project named Jean-Michel, who's a friend of ours. And he's worked on, you know, numerous great projects, and he was there helping us direct and make everything look really great. And yeah, we shot in 4 different locations for that. One of them, we just literally painted our garage black and we threw neon dust everywhere, again, to pay homage to DMC, the whole neon sign thing that's been floating around since the DMC1 era. We shot in a sewer here in Los Angeles, which was a little shady, but gave some great results.
And hopefully no rats.
no rats. It was a little slippery. There were a few falls here and there, but other than that, that's the worst thing that happened.
Wow. Is this the first music video that you've ever done?
Yes. That was another terrifying thing. Jan had actually done several music videos already, but it was definitely my first, and it was my job to make sure it represented the song Devil May Cry and that Jan knew how to, you know, put all this stuff together for us. So yeah, it was my first one.
Wow. Well, you know, if the whole composing thing doesn't work out, you know, you've got a new career for music videos.
Right. That's funny.
The other composers who worked on DMC5 were Jeff Rona and Cody Matthew Johnson. Did you interact with them at all, or was it kind of siloed and everything went through Capcom?
Yeah, it was definitely the latter. Everything was sort of siloed and went through Capcom. I'd met Jeff previously. I'm actually a fan of Jeff's music. I mean, he's been doing this for a lot longer than I have, and he's done some really incredible things, but I didn't even know he was on the project until after I had finished writing my song. Same with Cody. They both did fantastic jobs, and me and Allie are in love with both of the work that they've done. But no, unfortunately, we weren't aware of each other's work at the time and didn't get to celebrate each other's efforts until afterwards.
Oh, man. Well, I guess it speaks a lot to whoever the music supervisor is at Capcom, because it sounds really cohesive. It doesn't sound like there were 3 different people working on the score. It's really amazing when that happens. And it just, I guess, really speaks to how well everything is communicated so that nobody, you know, wanders off into the weeds and does something completely different.
Yeah, totally. I think everybody did a great job at keeping in with the same directive. And like you said, whoever, I believe it was lead composer Kota Suzuki and one of the audio directors, Yoshi at Capcom, who just, they had a clear vision for what they wanted, as well as the director, Itsuno-san. They know exactly what they want. They threw the right adjectives at probably at all of us, asked us to do our best. And yeah, I'm really happy with what everybody's delivered. It's been pretty insane to see it all come together here.
Yeah, I bet. One of the tracks that you sent me was Dante versus Virgil. And that got me thinking, you know, because every composer approaches writing music for a boss battle in a different way. And so what do you think about, like, either before you start writing one, or what do you do while you're writing it to make sure that it has, you know, not necessarily a beginning and middle and end, but that it escalates as the boss battle escalates?
Right. Well, so just to forefront that, spoiler alert for the title there. I don't want to ruin that for anyone. That's a big surprise at the end of the game. But yeah, when I prepare to write the battle tracks, I was asked after I wrote Devil Trigger if I wanted to prepare 2 final boss fights for the game. And they gave me the lowdown on how it wraps up the story and how it was important to each character. So yeah, I was getting to represent Dante for the first time in this fight. And sort of did the same thing I've been doing this entire time. I just wanted to dig into the past and try to bring it to something new. So that track in itself it's a mixture between orchestral music, a mixture of choir and organ thrown in there, as well as heavy metal. And funny enough, I know most people probably won't hear this coming through my music, but way before I was doing, you know, the video game music professionally and all this heavy metal or pop or industrial stuff, I'm actually an orchestrally trained composer. I have a degree in music theory and composition and all this other nerdy stuff. But yeah, it was fun to bring both the traditional training to the table as well as the, you know, the angsty metal and all that stuff. Yeah, it was sort of just high energy the whole time. I didn't really break it up into building it up over a period of time. I just wanted to keep it always high energy.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, psychologically, the boss battle music, you know, can really help the player by encouraging them pretty much, or yeah, keeping their energy up. And there are so many like little signals in the music that as a player, you kind of pick up on, like, oh, you're not quite done yet. There's some more minions coming or whatever. And so it must be a really interesting exercise to write music like that.
Yeah, Devil Trigger has more of that than the last two tracks that I wrote. I mean, we had to make sure that as they were climbing through the different ranks, that, you know, they were getting verses that were, you know, not too repetitive. So we wrote additional lyrics to make sure that, you know, they would have a bit of a variety. And we also made it to where it would work instrumentally. That way they're not always just getting words pushed into their ears if they didn't, you know, want them. And then we wrote additional lyrics for the choruses and pre-chorus as well, and as well as a bunch of transitional material. So say you're doing really well, you're in S rank, you know, you're getting this banging chorus bopping in your ears. And then all of a sudden, by some mistake, you know, you get hit. Well, then your rank's going to start dropping. And as soon as it drops below S rank, we have transitional material to take you to and from all these different ranks. And it'll drop you right back into another part of the song, like a verse or another instrumental section, but without losing any of the energy to let you know, hey, keep going, man. You're going to get it.
Oh, that's awesome. That's very cool. Because, yeah, the last thing you want to do is feel like you're going to fail and or be punished for failing. So by the music either dropping out or just, I don't know, giving you a cue like you should have done better.
So. Yeah, right. I think the goal was to reward the player with the choruses or when they're doing well in S rank, but not, you know, take things away from them just because, you know, something unexpected happens. Jeff, Cody, and myself did the battle tracks, and then I was asked to do an additional two tracks for the end. The one I was most excited about was the final fight. I don't want to give anything away. I don't want to ruin anything for the fans, but just say, it's safe to say that if you're a fan of Devil Trigger, I think you're really going to love what we did with the ending here. And it was alluding to what you were talking about earlier as well, which was sort of amping the player up. And we wanted to bring some of that, some still something, something back from things that you had heard previously in the game to really amp up how you were feeling at that very moment.
sounds amazing. And yeah, it's hard to talk about this without spoilers. But one thing I think we can say is that Capcom loves this soundtrack. They're so behind it that toward the end of March, they're going to be releasing 136 tracks on like 5 CDs and with a vinyl and everything. So, I mean, that really speaks to what a great job you guys all did.
Yeah, I saw the track count on that and I was like, oh my gosh, that's insane. But in reality, it makes total sense. You know, when people write music or composers write music for these games, it's so much music to write. It's crazy because most of the time we have to cut so much whenever we release these soundtracks just to make it listenable or just to fit within, you know, budget restraints or just something that can actually be consumed by someone that's not going to take, you know, 5 days to listen to. But I'm really happy that Capcom went that little extra mile and they have all these different variations of the songs that we did, including the Devil Trigger remix. They have the PSN version where they put Ali's vocals from Devil Trigger over some smooth jazz for fun. there's all kinds of crazy stuff on there. And even I myself can't wait to hear it all. I'm not 100% sure what all's going on there.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And it's going to be accessible everywhere, which is fantastic. And I think this is one of those soundtracks that people are going to be listening to. Well, like I was listening to it in the car with the windows rolled down and the music like really cranked up.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Some really interesting projects besides this game score. You do scores for live action films that have been adapted from games, like Assassin's Creed Black Flag and Rush that was inspired by Battlefield and Tom Clancy's The Division. And that's such an interesting way to kind of re-experience a game or expand the story. And so I'd love to know how that all got started.
Sure. That was actually how I got started as a professional, I guess I could say, as a composer. Back when I was living in Chattanooga, Tennessee, I'd been connected to a few directors that lived in Atlanta who were connected with people here in Los Angeles. And they were all doing, at the time, the up-and-coming YouTube thing, which was to make short films based on things that they love and release them to the fans. I think it started out as sort of fan fiction for them in the beginning. But by the time that I got connected with them, they had proved themselves so much that they were actually working directly with game companies to do PR for their up-and-coming games. So, for instance, as you said, you know, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, that was, I think, my first video to do with a company called Corridor Digital. And essentially what happened is Ubisoft gives them a budget. They pitched them a script or an idea. They gave us a whole ship to shoot on. It was crazy. And yeah, they let us explore musically with different stuff, as well as borrow from past themes if we really feel like it. And we got to do that with Far Cry. We got to do that with PUBG. The Division, as you said, was a more elaborate one. Again, Ubisoft gave us a budget to do a 4-episodic short film piece that ended up being about 35 minutes long. And yeah, that was so much fun. Again, they let me do original themes, and we got to represent the game in all kinds of different settings for those 4 different episodes. It was really fun.
That is so cool. And it must have been a fun experience to not necessarily copy what the composers for the games had done, but to sort of take the feeling that they conveyed and maybe the palette, and then, you know, use that as sort of a template for the music that you wrote.
Yeah, so I'm not one of those composers that get all up in arms about, I need to do my own thing. I like paying homage to things that people have set up already. It's sort of like, you know, composers that have to pick up the mantle of doing, let's say, a Bond film or a Mission Impossible film. I think it's so important to not just throw everything in the garbage when you approach a project like that. So when we worked on Assassin's Creed, for the most part, you know, I got to do my own thing, but every now and again, I'd like to shove in a little bit of Jesper's work in there. I mean, he wrote some really great themes for that entire series. Yeah, and same went for Ubisoft The Division. I listened to what he did, and rather than trying to take his melodic ideas, I just stuck with the sort of palette that he had chosen. So that way it felt like an extension of the universe. I didn't want fans to be taken too far away from what they were already getting familiar with or were going to get familiar with when the game came out.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's such an interesting discipline. And it just, I've always admired that about game composers, because you guys are such chameleons. I mean, you're able to write in so many different styles and make it like really convincing. And I just think that's a real talent. And I'm just constantly blown away by composers who write wildly different things. And yet, you know, it's just still by the same person. So that's really cool. Yeah.
I think that was sort of my allure to this whole cinematic universe, if you could, you know, use that as an all-encompassing word for film, games, and TV, is that, you know, you could be doing the most epic orchestral music that you could possibly imagine, and then the next scene you're doing a mandolin and a string quartet, and it's still the same universe. It's crazy. And I think that's part of the reason why I like it so much. I have a hard time sticking with just one thing. In my spare time, as I alluded to earlier, you know, I'm a classically trained composer, and I was taught with just pencil and paper and piano. We didn't really have technology classes that expanded beyond, you know, Finale or Sibelius notation, and that was it. So I still like doing concert works. I like doing solo piano works. But at the same time, I like heavy metal. I like punk rock. I like pop. And at the same hand of that, I love doing, you know, neuro bass and EDM and all kinds of other stuff. I have a really hard time focusing on just one thing, just because I love doing so much with music. And it seems to just play well with me being in this world of film, TV, and video games because of that.
Oh, yeah, that's like the perfect job for you, because you never know what the studio or the film or TV company is going to throw at you for their requirements. So that that must be really, really cool.
Yeah.
I love that you got your start helping other composers. In a previous interview, you said that one of the things that you did early on was help other composers, especially the ones who are working on Killer Instinct. And so what kind of help did you give them?
Sure. So I only got to assist one composer, really, and it was Mick Gordon. And Mick is a legend in the video game industry. He is not only extremely disciplined, but he's very good at what he does. And on top of that, he's one of the nicest people that we've ever had the pleasure of working with. And that, I think all those things combined really helped me grow quickly, because from the get-go, when he hired us to help out, it was mainly just Allie doing her thing. But then it sort of fell into, oh, you know how to do this. You know how to do this. Can you give me some help with, you know, XYZ or whatever it may be, lyrics, producing a couple sounds, or helping record, you know, instruments or whatever. Yeah, and that just turned into being trained to be more disciplined myself. I already had good work ethic, but when someone like that comes in and it raises the bar so much and you want to deliver the absolute best, and it just pushes you and pushes you to be the best you can be for them, because they have a standard that they have to deliver as well.
Yeah, and I think that kind of collaboration just helps everybody. Austin Wintory referred to it one time as, you know, getting feedback from the studio, even if it's not what you hoped, it's kind of like, it's constructive. And so it's like a really good workout at the gym, and it's going to make you better as a composer ultimately.
Oh, absolutely. Feedback has been one of the things that luckily school taught me early and how to handle. It should never feel like a personal attack on your ability or what you can or can't deliver. You should just take it, use it as a growing tool, and move on.
Well, I'm wondering if, you know, because you've come to this career path in, you know, kind of unusual way. And so I'm wondering if you've got anything to share for composers that might be just starting their career or trying to get their careers moving in the direction that you've taken yours in games or media.
Sure. For me, early on, it was late high school, playing in jazz bands, watching film. I decided then film music, that's what I'm going to do. I already had a passion for games, and TV wasn't really booming as much as it was back then. But then I definitely fell in love with that as well. So I just started to pursue something in the cinematic world somehow. So I just started practicing, whether that be, you know, formal composition, making sure that I knew how to write, and also expanding into technology, making sure I knew how to deliver files, making sure I knew how to make things. And then from there, it's just really a hustle. You find filmmakers who are making things. Don't aim for the top immediately. Find people who are at your level or at your age, and who are just as passionate as you are about making things. I think really that's the best thing that you can do, because as soon as I got connected with these people who were doing YouTube, whether it be Rocket Jump or Corridor Digital, that's where I grew the most. People who were being allowed to do new things, who were allowing me to do new things. And it was a really, really great way to learn.
Yeah, I bet. Well, it sounds like you really appreciated it too, and appreciated the opportunity that you had there and made the most of it. Wow, Casey, it's been so much fun talking with you, and the soundtrack, the pieces that you wrote for DMC5 are just amazing. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, Kate, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.